Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. It starts in the mountains of Northern California in late August. Jane Pearson is camping with her husband and their 5-year-old son. As Jane relaxes in a hammock, it happens. Her husband and son disappear, and they're not the only ones. Every person with a Y chromosome in the whole wide world also vanishes. After the disappearance of the men, Jane finds herself in a new world in which women rebuild society. That's the premise behind Sandra Newman's mind-bending, propulsive novel, The Men. She joined us to talk about The Men and what inspired her to write it.
This book was partly inspired by my reading of other such books, which often is where books come from, particularly the book The Female Man by Joanna Russ, which is sort of a landmark work of feminist science fiction, which has a female utopia where all of the men have disappeared and women form this completely different society over hundreds of years. And also, I think a lot of it is about the kind of political angst that most people have been going through, where you look at the state of the world and all of the potential solutions to the state of the world that seem to be failing catastrophically all around you, and try to understand why the solutions fail and why people are so desperate and incapable of coming up with better solutions that can stick.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to just drill down a bit more about the inspiration, how Joanna Russ's novel, The Female Man, how that influenced The Men. Can you talk a bit more about that?
Well, I think her book is one of the few books of this kind. There are a bunch of books where all the men disappear, generally the men die in a plague, but the plague is in the distant past. Or sometimes the men are just separated from the women, and that's how it has been for hundreds of years. And this allows the women to form a society which is assumed to be better because women are better than men. It's sort of a feminist cliche of second wave feminism, the 70s and 80s, were when most of these books were written, and there were a great many of them. And so in my book, it's more that the disaster happens now, which I think this is a more typical, like in the last few years, or really since Why the Last Man, which was 2002, there have been a number of books that dealt with the same idea, but as a catastrophe that is happening now. The men are dying now, the men have died now, and the women have to somehow save the men, usually. They're trying to save the men so that we can save the human race. And it's generally more of an action story than it is a political story. And I was trying, I guess, to deal with the side of the story which is predicated on a fantasy of genocide, and to deal with the moral implications of that in a more head-on way than Joanna Russ really does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I have to say, as a man, it was very refreshing to read a novel without any male characters. I thought it was a really nice change, I have to say. The Men opens with Jane Pearson, her husband Leo, and their 5-year-old son Benjamin camping in the California woods. What happens?
Well, she wakes up and her husband and son are gone. And at first she comes up with rational explanations for this. They must have gone for a hike without waking me up. That doesn't make sense because it's not something that they would do, but it's the only thing that could make sense. And so she begins to make coffee, but they don't come back. And then, of course, she begins looking for them and calling for them. She becomes increasingly upset. She can't get a phone signal, so she goes down the mountain until she can get a phone signal. And then she finds that when she gets through to 911, she's told that she can't get help if her emergency is regarding a male. And this doesn't make sense, so she calls again. And it goes on for a while before she begins to actually grasp that there is no help for this. And then she does the thing I think most people would do, which is to continue searching for them nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And can you talk a bit about how this event, the disappearance, how this affects the women who do not disappear, who remain on Earth?
What it is, it's a mass grief. It's basically the entire world turns into the kind of atmosphere that you get in, I guess, a big family when there's been a bereavement and everybody is desperately upset but everyone is also sort of bonding around feeling the same thing, around the distress that they have and the struggle to put things back together and continue to live. So it's a strange sort of mix of a new feeling of community with a feeling of mass loss and desperation and confusion.
Mm-hmm. And we should point out also that it all happens. All the men disappear at the same time. And it's just not men, it's children like Jane's son Benjamin, and it's fetuses. And it's really just it really happens on a global scale, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's just everyone with a Y chromosome. So there's mm-hmm. and there's no explanation whatsoever. There's no sign of what could have happened.
Mm-hmm. One of the intriguing themes that you explore is the possibility that the world might be better off without men. How did you weave that thread into the men?
Again, I did find that's the default assumption that people have, that at least in our generation and, you know, the few generations that are adults now, that's sort of what we've grown up with, is the idea that men are the source of violence, that men are the source of war, that men are the source of the patriarchy and thus essentially of all injustice. And I think there's some kind of nibbling away at that idea now, but it hasn't really taken hold in the public consciousness. So there is a strong feeling that women are better than men. And I think that when I was writing the book, like, I actually decided consciously when I began it, because there have been, like, there's Naomi Alderman's The Power, which is a book where women become more powerful than men. I won't go into the whole premise, but in her book, the assumption is that if women got power, they would become exactly the same as men, like in every respect, that it's power that does that and not gender. And I thought that was plausible as an account, but it might be more interesting to suppose that the world would be different. So, and partly I thought, like, if it's all happening now, if it's just like tomorrow there are no people with a Y chromosome. Actually, people without a Y chromosome have been socialized so differently that it would inevitably be a different society. Like, that kind of social conditioning just wouldn't disappear that quickly.
Yeah, yeah, definitely not. Yeah. Do you think of The Men as a utopian novel or a dystopian novel?
I think it's a bit of both. And I think that, like, all utopias, even the utopias that are intended to be, like, really good utopias that are meant to convince you that this is the way the world should be, end up coming across as a little creepy and terrifying. Like, Thomas More's Utopia is actually, if you read it, creepy and terrifying. Plato's Republic, if you actually think about how it would be to live in that society, it's actually creepy and terrifying. So I think this isn't a world that like those worlds, begins to feel fascist, but it is a world where you begin to feel a certain unease as it goes on, and you become increasingly aware that there is this weight of all of the people who are sacrificed in order to bring about this world, and they haven't disappeared. They haunt the world. They're still, in a sense, there. They're part of the world that's been created.
Mm-hmm. At some point after the disappearance, the women start to see signs of men online on a reality show called The Men, and there's this blurry video of men and various strange creatures. Can you tell us a bit about this without revealing any spoilers?
That is like the main means by which the men haunt the world. So it's a website where this footage is being streamed 24/7, which seems to show the men, the boys, the trans women, the infants, where they've gone. And we see them marching through this strange landscape. Most people assume this must be a hoax and find it tasteless in the extreme. And, you know, they're waiting for the other shoe to drop when they will begin to charge you to watch this footage. But some people believe in it and they begin to watch it obsessively, hoping to see the people they themselves have lost.
Hmm. Yeah, those points which, like, recur throughout your novel, that it becomes kind of a horror novel, and it's kind of very unsettling, which obviously is what you intended and what you achieved. There's also this burning girls conspiracy theory. Can you tell us about that?
There's a conspiracy theory which says that at the exact moment of the disappearance around the world, a statistically improbable number of women set themselves on fire. And this is the this is much murkier. It's unclear whether that's really true, you know, whether all of the women involved did set themselves on fire. And it's unclear how that could be connected to the disappearance. So that's there's a certain sort of sub-theme of conspiracy theories and how the internet is woven into our everyday lives there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jane Pearson reunites with an old college girlfriend named Evangeline Monroe. Can you tell us a bit about Evangeline?
Evangeline is basically the hero of the story in a way. She's the leader of a far-left organization called the Commensalist Party of the U.S. And both Jane and Evangeline have really complex backstories. And in Evangeline's case, what we first learn about her is that when she was 16, she shot two police officers and went to prison for this. And from this experience, she was radicalized and she turned into this figure and wrote a book called On Commensalism, which is sort of expounding a new political doctrine.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a bit about On Commensalism, the book, what the political doctrine is that the party believes in?
It's a form of extreme communitarianism where commensalism is a concept in biology which describes a relationship between two organisms where one organism somehow uses the other organism but without causing it any harm. In Evangeline's political philosophy, commensalism describes a lot of relationships between people. So for her, progressive taxation is an example of one organism, that is the people who have no money, gaining benefit from other organisms, rich people, who are not harmed by it because in no sense do they actually need the money that is taken from them. You can't like regard them as organisms and think this organism needs an extra $1 billion in order to prosper as a creature. So it's sort of reducing these things to a kind of a, I don't know, a biological comparison.
There has been some controversy about the men. Can you tell us about that?
So the objection to not just the men, but to the general trope of men all disappearing, men all dying, generally comes from the transgender community. And it's basically about defining gender according to biological sex. The heart of it is that in all such books, what happens is that people with a Y chromosome or people who are in some sense biologically male are the ones who die or disappear. And that means that you are kind of classing trans women with men and classing trans men with women. And often, like, what generally happens is that the existence of trans people is completely ignored, especially in books written in the 70s and 80s. But in some cases, including in The Female Man, there are just two pages which are about trans women, and they're really transphobic. They're just really gross. So I think that, like, that kind of treatment, either of erasure or of, like, open bigotry has affected the response to this trope. And I think like some of the more recent books have tried very hard not to be transphobic with varying success. Of course, like I really, really tried to treat trans people like with generosity, I guess. Like, but it's hard, actually, to address that particular problem.
Yeah, I thought you did a fine job of the portraying transgender characters. And so I'm curious about what you make of this criticism.
I think the criticism, it's like other criticisms of the kind, like the criticism of the, you know, the genre of the serial killer who commits sex crimes against women. It's sort of the prevalence of it and the way it plays out in each narrative that I think you can actually make a valid criticism of the trope as a trope without saying that every instance of the trope is a crime, which is where I would fall. I would say, yes, we have to, you know, it's worth talking about. It's worth talking about what this says about our assumptions and about the way society looks at gender.
What was the biggest challenge you faced while writing The Men?
Definitely making the plot work. This kind of bizarre and inexplicable thing happens and the reader reasonably expects that the author will explain it. And so I suffered a lot with coming up with an explanation that would not feel, you know, that would feel bizarre in the right way rather than in the wrong way.
How has writing The Men changed the way you think about women and men? Or has it?
Huh. Interesting question. I think there is something interesting about writing a great deal about women's relationships in the absence of men and how women interact with each other and what the norms are for that and what the possibilities are for that without men. Like, one thing that I have noticed is that some things are gendered and that really shouldn't be, like whistling. If you're walking around and you hear someone whistling, I think in the past, the entire time that I've been writing this book and have written it and published it, I have never found that the person whistling in public was a woman. So I think that's one thing that I really noticed, is that women are sort of socialized or taught somehow not to draw attention to themselves in public by making a noise. And that, I think, that really kind of stuck with me and made me think about what it's like to be in a female body in public and how drawing attention to yourself is a bad thing. It's sort of like giving an opening to some kind of attack, potentially.
Yeah, exactly. Sandra Newman, thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations on The Man.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. Thanks.
Sandra Newman is the author of The Men. You can find out more about Sandra and The Men at wpr.org/beta.
We are the reason that there are $15 billion in profit each year. And we are contributing to a system where all of that money is absolutely residing at the top.
Coming up, writer Steve Almond joins us to discuss his very intriguing thought experiment. It's all about the MFL, the Marxist Football League. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.